Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the NJ Podcast. This podcast aims to share stories, tips, and insights about achieving success while having fun. From topics ranging from personal development to business, entertainment, and sports, the podcast will have conversations with experts and people in their respective fields. The podcast will also share insights from Jabra James's published and upcoming books. The tagline, which is the theme of the podcast, is "Success is a progressive realization of a worthy ideal." This means that you are doing what you have always wanted to do because it is aligned with your highest values, and this is the only way you can live a truly fulfilled life. Your host, Jabra James.
Going. Hey everyone, this is NJ here, the host of the NJ Podcast, and welcome back to another episode on the conversation segment of the show. Remember that the show is about success, and the theme of it is success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. That means you're going after what you've always wanted to go after because it's aligned with your highest values, and that is the only way to truly live a fulfilled and inspired life. And on the show today, I've got Benoni legend. I've got to say, dance's legend. She was in the wrong house in Wardens, but like we'll skip over that.
I feel like you're holding that against me already from the get-go, man. This is downhill from here.
It's all downhill from here. It's all downhill from here. Yeah. So remember, on the show, we speak with people from all walks of life, whether you're an actor, singer, dancer, politician,
living in your parents' basement.
You've got a lot of good stories to tell there. Like, you don't live with your parents. You have your roommates, mom and dad. You know, that's what we call them.
No, they live with you.
They live with you. Yeah, they're paying you rent. You know what I mean? So, and on the show today, we've got someone. We went to school back in the day. I feel old now.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. So I was a matric in 2009, and that means you were in grade 10 at the time.
I was a kid.
You're a kid. Jeez, like, yeah. And now look at you now. You're busy gracing the world. So her name is Caitlin Henning. And so she was born on the 14th of June, 1993. See, she's a 90s baby. 90s babies are so good. Not those people born in 1999 and they want to claim being 90s.
Oh, yeah. They're like, I'm part of the millennials. And you're like, honey, no.
No, you're not. So then she's a South African voice actor and creative director. And she was born and raised in Benoni. You know, and but in South Africa, and she works in the cutting edge world of AI, VR, and tech as a creative lead and video editor. So she's a smart one, like a big creep Elon Musk hasn't got anything on her. And in addition, she edits short films for clients in Dubai, UAE, one of which earned her a Best Editing Award at the American Golden Picture Film Festival, held in Orlando, Florida, the United States of America, USA. Jeez, like. And she started uploading video content of her broad vocal range of famous and well-known characters from popular movies and shows. And Caitlin's hobbies include Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So she'll beat you. She'll beat you. She'll make you tap out. She'll make you say uncle, you know?
Consensually.
And she loves gardening, and she likes making authentic, and she does mean authentic, pasta dishes, and spending time with her friends and family. Caitlin Henning.
Hello. It's so good to be on the show.
Thank you for making the time and accepting the invitation to be part of this conversation. We're looking forward to, you set this up for 2 weeks ago, yeah?
I think so, yeah. This is my first ever podcast, so thank you so much for having me on here. It's going to be absolutely
good.
A banger.
Yeah. 100%. You should do a lot more podcasts, but then if you book her, just know that she was with me first.
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys came late. Y'all were sleeping on cake. Y'all were sleeping. Y'all weren't doing the things that made the things not to be done, right? So you're from Benoni, SA, right? So then you went from Benoni all the way to Dubai and then the United States of America and then back to Benoni. So how did your hometown upbringing sort of shape who you are right now?
Well, I think, who can really hold a candle to Benonians, I think, in terms of their candor, the humor.
Yeah.
We really are, it really does speak to you as a human for just how I think, approachable we are.
Yeah.
And I never really felt different from anyone growing up in Benoni. I think only until I was in university when people would be like, oh, from the East.
Yes, okay. East from the East.
Yeah, they would say things like that, like, oh, incest. And I was like, oh,
what?
City rivalries? Oh, that's a thing. So I never really felt different and didn't really make an impact on me until I went to university. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then when I started entering the working world and I was exposed to people like Santonites and people from Branston and Capetonians as well.
Why do they speak like that, Branston? Why do they talk like that?
I think it's maybe to do with like the bran or like, I don't know, something in their food or water because they have such water shortages. Maybe it like chemically alters them. That is my hypothesis. Yeah. We're going to have to test that.
Yeah, we're going to have to test that. Anyone who stays in Branston, you need to come and explain why you talk the way that you talk.
But,
yeah.
Science this, bitch. So, I think it was once I actually traveled outside of that, you know, the space and was exposed to people, not internationally, but just from within our country. And then I thought, oh, okay, yeah, people in Benoni are really nice. Mm-hmm. They're gritty. They're... need a bath generally, but you know, it is what it is. But I think that definitely made me feel like, okay, yeah, this is a very homely suburban area and the people are just really genuine versus most other, and this is not me ragging on Capetonians or people from Bryanston or anywhere else, but yeah, I think there is it holds a special place for me at least.
100%. So then you went to St. Dunstan's. How was that? How did that help shape you before you go to university?
Bro. I was not popular in school. Can I just tell you from the get-go?
You were not popular in school.
I was not popular in school. I was a weirdo. A genuine weirdo.
Yeah, yeah.
I was bullied quite a lot, actually. So I think that that actually created quite a lot of...
Wasn't your mom a teacher there? So
that didn't help things either.
What?
But yeah.
I don't know you were allowed to do that. Bullying.
No, I think my mom was cooler than me, hey?
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, at least like she had street cred. There was me and I was just like, nee. But yeah, I mean, one thing I will say is that I did have, even though I didn't feel like I fit in,
sure,
I definitely felt like I belonged though with my friend group. And that friendship group, a lot of them I still carry with me to this day. And what's great is that it hasn't been from a point of convenience. Yeah. I've moved overseas. I've lived elsewhere. And some of the people who I weren't in my year, who I was not friends with, I actually ended up becoming friends with outside, you know, in university, even though we didn't go to the same university. We just clicked and through other mutual friends. And now I'm a bridesmaid for one of these people whose wedding's happening.
Oh, amazing. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it, I think friends and your friendship group, they shape you so much in your formative years. And they also inspire you to be who you are going to become.
Yep.
I grew up with a, you know, type A parents, that sort of thing, very academic. And there was me and I'm like, I want to be a creative. And they were just like,
how did that go out?
Well, I could literally sneeze in a tissue and my dad would be like, I'm framing this. This is amazing. What? I love everything that you do. And then my mom was just like, She was quite hardball, I think, but I think in her later years, she you know, really does appreciate and can understand what it is that I do, and she takes an interest in it, and it's really great, despite us not having commonality with the academic side. I go to her house and she's like, I want you to draw on my whiteboard the cats in an animated form every time you come here because I find such delight in it. And I'm like, well, you can do maths, but I'll just draw funny characters, and if you enjoy it, you enjoy it.
No,
so but going back to the whole friends, I think my friends, a lot of them were very academic and they worked really hard to get to, you know, the marks that they did. And that spurred me to also want to have such a good work ethic and want to eventually work my way up in the ranks. And by the time I hit, I think, grade 11, grade 12, matric year, I was doing pretty well in school. And it was through a lot of hard work and me going to extra lessons and putting in the hours and that sort of thing. Mm. And I think you carry with that into university, into your career. I mean, you would know also being a business person how your formative years in school even key moments, interactions with a teacher must have shaped and formulated who you are today.
Yeah, like, well, the reason I'm so awesome is because I was in Bishops and not Woodens. I'm joking. It's such
the shade. Can I leave?
You know,
I think that's my time.
The door's locked. The door's going nowhere.
I do jiu-jitsu. I'm going to bust that lock.
Yeah, I actually just forgot. I just told the people that you do jiu-jitsu, and then now I just forgot that you did that.
You're going to see me like go to town on a door.
On a door.
I think that's what's going to get you viral.
We're going to go viral. Present jiu-jitsu on the door, yeah. All right, so then after say dozens, you went to which university did you go to?
So I went to, I still wonder to this day. I don't have any regrets in my life, but I do sit and think, if I did this, I wonder what would have happened. I was accepted into UCT and I was going to go with one of my best friends. A college in Pretoria called Open Window, they also accepted me and they seemed a lot more approach, not just theory, because Cape Town was all theory for the first 2 years, because I went and sat in on lectures because I was like, no, I gotta know what I'm getting into.
Yeah.
So, but they were a lot more hands-on at Open Window and that sort of thing. And I thought, well, yeah, I need to know the practical and that sort of thing and not just how the Bolsheviks affected, you know, film and everything. Although, you know, I enjoy a good Slav story, but I wanted to have that hands-on experience. So I went there. And it was very Afrikaans, very Pretoria. I wasn't exposed to a lot of Afrikaans kids growing up. So again, I felt I didn't really belong and didn't fit in again.
But you grew up in Benoni. You're just supposed to learn Afrikaans for survival.
Benoni is very English though. I think it's Boksburg that's Afrikaans.
Okay, so this I think, because I grew up in Lakefield, Benoni, and right across the road is Boksburg.
Yes, that's right. Okay. So you had like the best of, like Miley Cyrus, best of both worlds, Hannah Montana life.
I had to survive. It's
it's tough in Lakefield, yeah, man.
But
you know what's funny? Yeah. My childhood house in Lakefield was actually converted into a meth lab.
A meth lab?
Yeah, yeah.
No ways.
If you Google now, if you want to bring up a visual, I'm sure you can go and look it up.
Yeah,
Lakefield, Benoni on Sher Avenue. My childhood home, they converted into a meth lab. There was a whole drugs bust and everything. I looked at the garage where I remember us hosting like Halloween parties and I saw three cookers and I was just like, oh my God.
So people were Breaking Bad.
It was full on Breaking Bad. It was hectic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they still had the lucky horseshoe above the door and I was like, well
You know. That. Yeah. So then in university experience, like you said, that it was quite Afrikaans and you are English.
I'm quite English,
you're
yes.
Quite English.
Rather, like, darling.
So you're fully English. So you could have been on the Crown.
I'm an English breakfast, yes.
Okay. So you wake up with your Earl Grey tea and crumpets and
the whole kit
first and breakfast and then second breakfast and afternoon tea.
Ooh, I'm enjoying this Lord of the Rings kind of adage that you're putting. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I'm enjoying it.
I'm just checking if that's an actual real thing because I haven't had a conversation with a pure English person about whether it's true or not.
Yeah, so very, very English upbringing. But I mean, I still enjoyed it. And I think I got on with my lecturers a great deal. To the point where I would go out for like lunches with them and that sort of thing, just because I really enjoyed their company.
Okay.
And then from there, I moved into the working world. And that was really me being based more in Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, what was your first gig? What was your first job that you got?
Wow, my first job. It was actually at a company called the Jupiter Drawing Room.
Yeah.
As their sole in-house editor. And I was so excited because actually my first proper gig was a waitress at Hooters.
Let's dive into that because I didn't spend a lot of time around Hooters.
You being business, you're just like, she a hoe.
I didn't say that. You did.
My words, I take that.
You did, but now that we're on the topic. So how was the whole life? No, I'm joking.
The whole life was good.
She's owning it. So my question is like, so Hooters, I think I went there once with my brother-in-law. But there was the Hooters in Bryanston It was a branch in Bryanston.
Oh, Four Ways.
Four Ways, Bryanston. Oh, there was a branch there. So
Yeah. There's a one in Four Ways.
We sat outside and had a few drinks there, but didn't get immersed in the full thing. So I've heard a lot about it and what goes on there. Now, as an insider.
As an insider,
because you're actually a waitress, like there, what is it like? And
honestly, I mean, I was a very, I used to be a super devout, like, feminist. And the idea of it, I was just like, no. But I was studying at the time and I thought, well, this is a great way to make cash on the side for petrol and everything, because I wasn't staying in Pretoria. I was driving to and from Benoni every day.
Oh, boy.
And when I heard from people who I knew personally who had worked there, my sister also would have worked there a few other friends, and they said, listen, you don't get touched. There's nothing. Everything is above board. You're literally just a waitress and you just wear what you wear.
Skimpy clothing.
And really, that's it. And if you get more of it, of an extra tip just because someone likes you or they think they have a chance with you, then great. And I was like, well, that's perfect, because I don't want to do anything above that. I literally just want to give people food, maybe have a gas and a gag and talk with them and jazz hands. That was really it. So it was actually pretty professional. It was very above board. I didn't ever feel demeaned except for the one time this old man grabbed my hand. And I was like, please let go.
Why was he grabbing your hand?
Old man shit. So yeah, I think he thought he could, that this was a, I don't know, like maybe he could get away with more than just me serving him food. But so there was that, and then that definitely got me into a work ethic and thinking, okay, well, this is how you can be strategic and this is how you work with money and work in a team, you know, and that sort of thing. So, and when I was actually at Hooters, I bumped into someone who worked at the Jupiter Drawing Room, and he was looking to retire. And then from there, he's like, well, I'm looking for a replacement. Do you want the gig? And I was like,
yeah, sure.
So, then from there, it snowballed into me working at the Jupiter Drawing Room. Mm-hmm. But, unfortunately, they went under within months of me joining. So
is that just coincidence or?
Of course. It was. I'm sticking to that story.
You see, the problem is you didn't go with your lucky horseshoe.
I still to this day want to break into that house and be like, where the lucky horseshoe went.
Exactly, yeah. At university, University of Pretoria, which is basically grade 13 of St. Dunstan's. Everyone just decided to go there.
Wait, did you go there?
Absolutely not. I was like, I am going far from it. You know how far I went? I went all the way to Grahamstown. All the way
Dang.
To Rose
University. I'm like, that's like buttfuck nowhere.
That's what I wanted. Thank you. You get it. Like, I wanted to be far. I remember my mom was saying, can you please stay? We want to see you. I'm like, no, I don't want to see you.
One of my best friends, Matt, he went to Grahamstown and he really enjoyed it. But he said, you're so isolated from everyone. And it's both a blessing and a curse.
Exactly.
What was your experience of it there, though?
Rhodes was amazing. It was amazing.
You enjoyed it?
Thoroughly. There's nothing that I didn't do there at Rhodes. Think about whatever it is you want to think about. I was so organized. I was like, okay, right. I've got maximum 4 years here, because I didn't want to become an ancestor staying there. So I said, I've got a maximum 4 years there, right?
Yeah.
I made a list of all the things that I need to do. I need to do like drama shows here, leadership positions here, all of this stuff. Parties, I finished all of it. All of it. So then when I left, I'm like, I never have to come back here. It was great because it's very isolated to the point that there's only maybe three things you can do there as a guy. Just three main things. You have to study.
Yeah.
And then after that, what do you do? You party.
And
if not, get yourself a girlfriend. That was the man code at Rhodes University in my experience.
And did you?
As I said, as a preface, I finished.
You finished everything on that list. Got the girl, you were just like, okay, we're done. I'm going back to Gauteng.
I'm going back home. So no, it's good because then you get the full, my experience, I got the full student experience. And then also me being an artsy kid, you know, I did BCom in information systems. Great. But then I also got allowed to, I was involved in journalism, I was involved in drama, I was involved in the speaking. So it was a cultural hub.
So many outlets for you then.
Yeah, exactly. Which was very good because there were no distractions. I didn't have to worry about Santon traffic. I didn't have to worry about Pretoria traffic. I didn't have to worry about... But you like
after, humble brag.
It's not even a humble brag. It's a brag. No, it was amazing for me. But I needed to get far, far away.
Mm.
That's what I needed. So that experience was very good for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. That's. I think it just really does help grow you as a person to also just be away from home and have to figure things out as you go.
They don't tell you about that. They don't tell you about that when you're 5 years old. They didn't tell like, look, listen, you're gonna grow up and it's gonna be hard. You're gonna have taxes. You're gonna have to figure your way out, little buddy. They don't tell you that.
This is purple. We're learning purple today.
That's what they tell you.
Yeah.
Like they should have given me a full time job at 6 years old. But so while you're at the University of Pretoria, or as they call it, techies, I believe.
I wasn't at University of Pretoria. I was at Open Window.
Open Window.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. So you went.
I had friends who went to grade
13. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So they were the cool kids who were like, oh yeah, I still see this person and like they're walking on campus. They still pretend like they don't know me. And I was like, prick. But I mean, I went to my uni.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. And it was still Pretoria. Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you cut your teeth there and what did you study there?
So it was film and television, and I also double majored in screenwriting.
Film and television?
Yeah.
Oh, like, I'm so nerding out right now. So who's your favorite screenwriter? For me, it's Mr. Tarantino.
Really? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Quentin, yeah, with these Blood and Gore, Kill Bill 1 and 2, and The Hateful Eight, and Pulp Fiction.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, he's a huge fan favorite, I must say.
Yeah.
I would say I'm... Oh, this is going to sound so basic, and I understand that. But I love Nolan. I just think that he...
Chris Nolan! Yes.
The Nolan brothers, they really do understand the process from... Because he cut his teeth as an editor.
Okay.
So he understands from what is required from pre-production all the way to post-production and everything in between, like a beautiful Gatsby sandwich.
Mm.
So as an editor and also as a writer, I can really appreciate everything that he...
they bug me every day.
I really have such an appreciation for everything that he brings to the fore when it comes to creating something that is concise yet so in-depth and that will keep you hooked for the entire 2.5 hours or however long his, whichever film that you pick of his.
So
I would say I really do love his style of writing, and it rewards multiple views. It's not like you watch it once and you're like, oh, that was great, okay, cool. You literally can go and watch it 5 more times and then say, I didn't pick up on this very subtle thing.
He finally got his golden statue for Oppenheimer.
I know.
I was like, finally. Jeez.
Yeah,
like,
him and his wife Emma, I think it's Emma Thomas. It's not Emma Thompson. I think it's Emma Thomas or Tom. Emma.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Yeah.
But him and his wife both finally got that recognition, which I think must mean the world to him.
So how was his wife involved?
She is a producer.
She's a producer. Oh, okay. Yeah. So she got not nominated. She won for.
She also won. I think it was for best film. Because they have a company together called Syncope.
Yeah.
And that's what funds all of their ventures and their films. Yeah.
Okay, I see. Like, I'm glad he won for Oppenheimer. He should have won for Memento those years back.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a very, very good one.
It was quite messed up. I'm like, guy murdered his wife, but
but did he? And there's sticky notes and there's things tattooed on. No, it was just really, really great. I mean, I haven't seen that in so long. It's probably been 10 years.
Yeah.
But I still remember watching that film when I got it from someone in uni, like my first year, sitting lying in my bed and watching it, and I was just like, this is art.
it is definitely art. So which is Nolan's best work in your opinion?
I must admit, I'm not a huge fan of superhero movies just because they've become so mass-produced and McDonald's-esque.
They're so bad. Now they're so bad. Yeah.
First iterations, like 2008, Tony Stark, Iron Man, Thor, that sort of thing, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But of Nolan's films, I would say it's for me, one of my favorites of his is The Prestige or The Dark Knight.
The Prestige, oh, wow.
Yeah, one of either of those two.
How does he not know?
Oh, gosh. That's
amazing.
It's so,
absolutely amazing.
And he knows that his cast will bring their A game. Yeah, so I like that he knows who to, you know, who to include and that sort of thing.
Mm, yeah, 100%. So why is Nolan a favorite of yours? Like,
so again, I think being an editor, and I've always been so editor oriented, him just having that intuitiveness with bringing from the writing stages, he also makes sure that he's always on set, even if he was just going to be an editor.
Yeah.
He also brings his editor, who's usually, I think, Lee Smith.
Yeah.
On the set, so that from an editor's perspective, they can say, this is actually going to be useful. That's going to be useful. And I've kind of done the same thing with my work, where I am involved in any short films. And I know I'm going to be the editor on something, although I can't go to Dubai and be on set there.
Yeah, yeah.
What I can do is just read through the scripts and then think, okay, I can picture this, this, and this. We need this to be explained. So either we need to do it through an editing choice, or it needs to be kind of spelt out in a simple manner. So being able to go in and say, mention this and maybe tweak that or have this included, you have such a better, more well-rounded art, piece of art at the end of it.
No, that's good. So are you going to create your own movie, like full-scale movie one day?
Me? Oh, no. No. I think that's not really my intention. I enjoy, I think, collaborating with a lot of people who I know are talented and can do all these sorts of things. I feel so stretched thin as it is with everything that I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to try and do too much at once.
Sure, sure.
But I really and truly appreciate collaborating with super talented people, and even people also up and coming and learning, but have such passion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then they're able to feed off you, you feed off them. It's just a beautiful synergistic cycle.
Yeah, 100%. So you went from Open Window, and then you were at Hooters. So basically, Hooters.
Yeah.
Sorry. So Hooters plugged you into your first job, technically.
Yeah.
Technically.
So
it's
kids,
a gateway.
Kids,
so it's a gateway. Kids. So it's a gateway to.
Kids, if you take anything away.
If you want to be successful in life, go to Hooters and get yourself a job.
Yeah. Honestly, though, it will put you in such good stead in some shape or form. It's gonna, you're gonna manifest your bliss, bro.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think I want to go there later on this evening. So then you got your first gig. What was that company called again?
The Jupiter Drawing Room.
The Jupiter Drawing Room. So then you joined there, and then you said they went under.
So then they went under. Then I went to Cape Town for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Did some work there. Then I came back up. Was in Joburg, and then I had about a year and a half at a company up in Rivonia, and that was great, and I really enjoyed working with them, and I still, you know, chat with them and still, you know, on a friendly basis. They're such lovely people. And then I got an offer overseas and in Dubai, and then I went over there, worked there, then COVID hit, so then I had to come back, and now I'm working where I'm working.
All right, cool. So then while you're in Dubai, just tell us about the whole Dubai experience.
It is, so in terms of what exactly?
So let's just break it down like this. So then the actual work that you were doing.
Yeah.
And then the country of Dubai, it is a country, right?
The UAE, United Arab Emirates.
UAE is a country, and then Dubai is what the...
It's like a city. It's an emirate,
Okay, so it's a city. All right, cool.
Yeah.
See, learning something new every day.
Geography.
Geography. I didn't major in geography. As you can see, that's why I've got like so many globes, just to make sure I know where things are.
You're like, this is Africa.
Yeah, this is Africa. Yeah. So, because my understanding of Dubai is that it's safe. They say it's safe. They say it's clean. Mm. And quite a lot of, you know, in the entertainment industry, when I'm talking about entertainment, I'm talking about actors, I'm talking about DJs, all that. They go to Dubai for pleasure. You know what I mean? That's what I hear. I hear they take their girlfriends and the side chicks over to Dubai.
I'm like, oh, habibi, come to Dubai.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I want to get your experience, because it's technically you're in the creative arts as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to get your experience of the work that you were doing and then the city of Dubai.
Mm. So the work there is pretty much, I mean, what you would also get to do here, but there are also a lot more blockbuster films that could be filmed there that you can still hop on board with.
Sure.
In the capacity for production or for acting, crew, that sort of thing. And like Dune, they filmed Dune 2 there, Mission Impossible. Even certain scenes for like Sonic and that sort of thing.
Oh,
like they'll use the desert there because they've got such friendly film, I think, legislations and that sort of thing with the UAE, and it's very easy to get permits and that sort of thing. So that, I mean, the level of opportunity there is immense. Mm. So you do feel like the world is your oyster there.
Yeah.
It's such a melting pot. You think, oh, it's an Arab country, so it's strictly going to be mostly Arab and Muslim people that you deal with. But it's not so.
Mm-hmm.
They're very open to all different cultures. They will still celebrate Christmas and Easter.
Is it?
And that's sort of like Ishtar is Easter. And
yeah, yeah.
So they're... I think anyway, like, don't quote me on that. Someone saying they'd be like, this dumb bitch.
We're quoting her on it 100%. And remember, the views of the guests are not that of the host. They're just...
There's a wall that's being divided here. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. So they're very inclusive and that sort of thing, which is great. And you are exposed to different cultures that we necessarily don't really get to see here, despite South Africa being so multicultural.
Sure.
So it's really great in that sense. And yes, the safety aspect is, I've actually got a fun story for you.
All right, tell me the fun story.
Dang. Okay, this is, I'm going to have to clear my throat for this one. So
who was he?
He was a real man. So
did he have you at hello?
He had me at... I missed the key there. But so I'm trying to find a good hook for this. But I was once accused of trying to bomb the Chinese consulate.
You were accused of trying to bomb the Chinese consulate.
Yeah.
How does that work? How does it even happen? How does that work?
Settle down, kids. So I was staying in a villa. They call like a house that has a lot of rooms, and if you live with like five other people, you know, however many other people, they call that a villa. So it's a very big piece of property, like a house. And I was staying with a whole lot of other South Africans, and I was borrowing my sister's car at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was still flying for Emirates as a hostess. And
sister's name again?
Ashley.
Ashley. Oh, yeah. Ashley.
Yeah.
Where is she?
She's still in Dubai, in Sharjah, and she's starting to become a pilot. She just graduated.
Ooh,
and
pilot.
I know. I know. And she can now fly an A320.
Wow.
As of last week, she got her certification. So, yeah. So she's making waves.
Hey, Ashley, like, we went to the same school together. So if you don't mind just like giving me free tickets to Dubai and like, you know, I just... Hook me up. I just want to fly around for free, man. That's what I want. That's what I want.
We'll circle back to this and see what comes of it.
We'll see. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I was sitting in my room late at night working on something, and my other other housemate, she came in, and she was also Afrikaans as well.
Afrikaner, oh wow.
And she's like, Caitlin, there's some police looking into your car.
Uh-uh.
And I was like, oh. Okay, and I was literally there, had been there for 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, you know, it's Dubai things. They're very good at their job, and the police actually work and do what they do. She's like, yeah, but they're looking in with torches. And I was like, oh, okay. Then she leaves. 10 minutes later, she's like, Caitlin.
This is a full-on investigation.
Do more of them now with a dog. Yeah. And the dog is sniffing around the car.
Ow.
And so I said, oh, do you think maybe I should go out and just... You know, ask them, is everything okay and everything? And she's like, no, no. I've heard of people who get taken out to the desert and they never heard from again. You do not want to go out and speak to them unless there's all of us as witnesses. And I was like, oh my God. So I was shitting myself senseless. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it just kept snowballing. Like, to think of like Seinfeld, it just kept snowballing and snowballing and snowballing. Yeah, yeah. And eventually, Bomb Squad was there. There was a tow truck. There were like people with all these dogs and the berets. And when they see the soldier, they have to like do the whole salute thing, a whole lineup. It was hectic. Intense. I'd not seen anything like this. And eventually I thought, okay, I got to turn on the white lady charm. And I was like,
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing.
The truth comes out. White women have privilege.
We do.
Do y'all?
We do.
I want to know about you this privilege.
You just got to act dumb or just like act like yourself. And you just be as disarming as possible, because honestly, like, I don't want trouble. I know I'm not going to win against the Emiratis. So I'm just going to go there and be like, hello.
Yeah.
Is there something I can help with?
Yeah.
So long story short, they're just like, is this your car? Are you Caitlin Henning? And I was like, oh my God.
Even you know your name. Wow.
Yeah, I was like, take me out to dinner first. But he said, yeah, this is your sister's car, right? And I said, yes. And they're like, yeah, she's currently out the country, right? So they know everything. They know who you are. They know where your other family is. They know what property is and is not yours. And then I thought, maybe they thought I'd stolen it or something. And I said, no, this is my sister's car, but I'm just borrowing it. Yeah, and it was all like agreed upon. And like, okay, this year, and they pointed to the house right next to us, is the Chinese consulate.
What?
And your car's parked right here, and there's a bag in the front seat. A little Adidas bag with butterflies on it. And they said, we want to know what's inside this bag. So I literally felt like Mr. Bean in that scene where he's at the airport and he's got like his finger gun inside his pocket. Yeah. And then I thought, and no, to make things better, I tried to diffuse the tension by, you know, being a freaking clown and like saying like, well, the only weapons I have in there are like my smelly gym clothes.
Oh,
like crickets. Goodness. There are no insects in Dubai, but there were crickets at that time in point. And so I take out the bag, I open up the zipper, and I show him my stanky gi. Mm-hmm. And they look at it, and they look at me, and they go, okay, please just don't park here in future.
And that was that.
And that was it. And then, but like I said, I'm a white lady. I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do. So then I was like, well, there's no sign saying that I cannot park here.
Don't do that, Caitlin. You just got off. You just got off.
But I was not gonna be intimidated white by woman. This guy. Yeah. We will see a pet line. We'll see a line and be like, that's a pet. That I can tame it. I'll make it love me. But anyway, I was still diffusive, but I said, I understand, but there's no sign here saying that I cannot park here. And I have parked here for like these past couple of weeks. And they're like, yeah, we understand, but this is the Chinese consulate. And you know, like with the news and everything. And I was just like, fair enough. So I just took my car and I parked it across the street. But yeah, that was like me 2 weeks into a new country. And they probably still check up on me every now and then, look at my profile history and see like, what is she looking at now?
Mm. Well, first of all, I want to say, I didn't know that this is what happened. So don't come track me. I'm a law abiding citizen.
Are you though?
I'm a law abiding citizen. Is it? I have a few parking tickets, but
they're going to put that down. He's got parking tickets. We have enough to arrest him.
That is actually quite funny, because had that been me, I would have been yes sir, no sir.
Anything you say.
Yes. I'm just affirmative there, because if did they have guns? Did they have guns?
Oh yeah.
They had guns. Yeah. Okay, so first of all, if anyone has a gun pointed to me, I know, bitch. That's just what it is. Yeah. That is exactly what it is. There's no ways. I'm gonna be like, what? Yes, I'll comply. Even in my head, I'm like, I probably would have thought the same thing you were thinking. I'm like, but I park here all the time. There's no sign. Even if that's true.
Yeah,
I don't want no trouble. Yeah. I don't want no trouble.
No, I hear you 100%. Yeah. I think there was just something deep within me that I was just like, you know, I think I was also kind of embarrassed, you know, because there were so many.
I know what that thing is. It's what? Called white woman privilege.
White woman privilege. Let's call it what it is. Let's just call it what it is.
Blonde hair, blue eyes. You see. She hit the lottery, people.
Genetics.
Yeah. So but what was it?
Yeah, I think it was also just a bit of embarrassment, because they were like, okay, well, you can't park here. And like, little hef cake. They weren't that swishy, but I was just like, I was just like, no, but okay, I understand. But if you saying that, then I need also come back at you with some facts and, you know, common sense as well. I have parked here. Is there a reason I cannot park here? Just like, give me a breakdown. But anyway, it all turned out well in the end.
What was the rationale for? Okay, obviously it's a Chinese consulate, but why did they not put a sign there?
I think maybe, you know what I think? I think it was maybe mutual embarrassment. So I think the old guy was probably just like, this is my case. I'm going to break. I'm going to get this white girl and everything, and I've got bomb squad. I'm gonna retire now. I can go off to Maldives, and then I come out there and I'm just like, yeah, bro, it's just like a freaking gi in there. And then he was embarrassed in front of all of his subordinates, and he was just like, well, you can't park here anymore then. And then I was just like, can I though? So I think he was trying to just pull rank just to make himself feel a little bit better. Oh, all of the younger guys were super friendly. All the younger Emiratis, they were like, oh ma'am, it's okay. And I'm like, thank you so much, sir. But the old guy, he was just like, no. So I think he was just having a grumpy day.
So I'm seeing a trend here in our conversation. There's just one archetype, one character that just keeps on being a thorn in your flesh, and that is an old man. First is the old guy who brought Tasha Head and Hooters, the old guy. God, and now it's this old guy who thinks you're trying to bomb the...
Yeah, old men are the bane of our existence. I mean, let's look at the tech billionaires, like... Come on.
Oh, Big Crip Elon is my guy. I love Big Crip Elon.
Musk.
I love Elon Musk.
He comes in and out of here, my preference and my admiration.
Yeah, comes in and out.
Yeah, like some days I'm just like, oh, he's amazing. And then other days I'm just like...
Okay, let's break this down, because it's going to be a nice segue into how you're involved in VR and AI.
Ah,
and
so yes.
Big Crip Elon Musk. For me, is a hero. Like, I mean, for me, he's a hero. Not for his personal life, because I couldn't care how many kids he has, who he's married to, if he's a nice guy or not. I really don't care. For the work that he's done and continues to do. So on this continuum, you just said sometimes he's admirable to you and sometimes he's not admirable to you. So what are the scenarios where Elon Musk, hey, Elon, I got to get you on the show. I'm from South Africa. She's from South Africa. You're from South Africa. Come on now. So yeah.
You can't deny.
You can't deny. See the resemblance? So when does Elon Musk become admirable to you?
I think when it comes to him being very mindful about the obvious problems that could arise with regards to AI and that sort of thing. Also, you know, with I'm not that big into crypto and that sort of thing personally, but, you know, I think there's a general sense that he's trying to do some good in some capacity. And of course, there's always going to be like whatever's going to make it easier and best for him at the end of the day. That's the bottom line. And if it so happens to benefit other people along the way,
Great.
To be fair, we're all like that. We all are very much programmed to be like that. We have to be business minded and we have to look out for ourselves. I totally understand that. I think there's just been a few incidences, but then again, it's whatever I'm exposed to in the media that could have been twisted, that could have been taken out of context, that I will read and I'll kind of go, that's a bit of a dick move on his part or that sort of thing. But again, you don't know who's trying to wrangle in that sort of way, who's trying to, you know, cast him in a certain light. So I don't have a major overall opinion of him, but it's generally positive. But I also do think that, I mean, we all also, you know, can get a bit power hungry and, you know,
So you think he can get power hungry at some times? Right?
I think so. I mean, doing the whole thing from changing something from Twitter to X, I personally don't understand the need to change it. I mean, like this whole thing about TikTok about to be banned as well.
And it is in the States, yeah?
Yeah, in the States.
And I just started getting serious about TikTok, guys. Come on.
Same. I got 500 new followers in one day and I was like, just in time for the ban. It's amazing. But there's something that Gary Vee said recently that I think he...
Gary Vee. Gary, I got to get you on the show.
Yeah, I enjoy him. I have a lot more of an opinion on.
Yeah.
I really enjoy his outlooks, his opinions, his thoughts, his notions. They're all so aligned to being a a decent human being.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have mad love for him. And he said that a lot of people are obviously going to be so upset, like, oh, but my TikTok and this and that. And he's like, but the attention's going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it will resurge and it will sprout forth and something new will come of it. And yes, I understand there's also a lot of small businesses that will be hugely affected by if the ban goes through, which it's looking like it might, unless they don't have someone who will buy it from the Chinese. But it is a very interesting insight into thinking, okay, well, that it's the attention that's going to be just directed somewhere
else.
Yeah. So
why are they banning TikTok, by the way? I haven't been following that in depth. What is the rationale to ban?
From my understanding, which I think is rather funny, is that they're saying, oh, they're mining your data and they're spying, using it to spy on you because it's the Chinese and that sort of thing. When Meta and Facebook do far worse,
but it's because
they're chummy with the Americans. Uh-huh. Mark Zuckerberg, isn't he American, right?
He is American.
Yeah, so he's safe. But because it's on Chinese soil that it was created and that sort of thing, they're able to, kind of make it in a way that, it's an us versus them and it's outside of us, our jurisdiction, that sort of thing. So they are trying to, I think, create such polarities and, distances between us as a whole. Mm-hmm. Everyone just enjoying the platform for what it is.
Yeah.
And I think like any platform, you can manipulate it and it can be used for nefarious purposes. Yeah, that's true of anything. But for them to claim that when you literally need a Facebook account for so many things, which is far more invasive, I think it just speaks sheer volumes.
Yeah, 100%.
And the fact that this was expedited through over and above gun laws and other things, the housing crisis. Yeah. I mean, like this whole TikTok thing was about last year they were talking about it. But how many school shootings have there been? The housing crisis, student loan, that sort of thing. But it's like, what's more important?
People being killed in schools. I'd rather focus on that.
Yeah, you would hope.
But clearly not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's essentially what's happening there. Oh, okay. As far as I'm aware.
Yeah, yeah. So then in your work, you do a lot of augmented reality.
Mm.
You do AI.
Yes.
You do a lot of AI in your work. So can you just walk us through how you got to, I wouldn't necessarily say expert, but you use it quite.
I'm not an expert.
But you use it quite often, right?
Yeah. So I work in the field. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. Take us through it. And then is AI going to turn into Skynet? Or are we going to be taken out like Terminator 2? Is that what's going
to
happen?
That's up to you, dear viewer. It's all down to the single man.
We need John Connor.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Get to the chopper.
Yeah, get to the chopper.
Yeah. I mean, It's such a flighty topic of interest, I think, right?
Yeah,
because so many people either are love to have such a solid opinion on it and either say it's the worst thing ever to happen, it's going to take all our jobs, it's going to take menial labor that the uneducated or the unskilled can take, it's going to do all these things. Then you've got other people on the opposite end who think it's the best thing since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to kind of take a very face value of it, it definitely does enable a lot of processes to be done at greater efficiency it expedites a lot of processes. So it's great and it's definitely a helpful tool, but I think it's how it has been created and how it's going to be deployed. That to me is how we are going to be able to regulate it going forward, I think. So that is really the crux of it. Who's going to be in charge of that deployment is anyone's guess.
Elon Musk.
So yeah, but he wasn't a fan of it. I think his musings on it he says it's quite dangerous and that sort of thing, which I respect him for, because he's not just trying to come out and say, oh, it's amazing or whatever. He's saying, yeah, it has a potential to be very dangerous and that sort of thing, which is great and very true. But it is also, unfortunately, an unstoppable force. The Pandora's box has been opened now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a case of, okay, well, we're going to put a lid on it and that sort of thing. We now need to learn how to embrace, like with any change, how to embrace and move along with it. Mm. I mean, if you think about farmers, you know, everyone back in the day used to have some sort of farming knowledge because that's what all that we knew. And then when tractors and that sort of thing came out, people could easily have been like, oh, you know, shake fist at this. This ain't the future. But now it is. And there are fewer farmers. But having said that, you know, they had to evolve with the times. We are going to have to as well. But I also can understand and appreciate that this is evolving at a much more rapid rate than how farming and agriculture evolved over many years versus this is a case of months, weeks. When we think of where ChatGPT was a year ago, what it's able to do, or VizCom, or Midjourney, or Runway, what it's able, or DALL-E, like where what it's able to do now.
That Sora thing where that generates a video like in like a minute video, but you just give it a prompt, and just generates this like realistic looking video. I'm like, yes. Wow, yeah,
and things that are able to digitally twin your voice so that you can speak in Portuguese now, and now you can like sound like you're Nigerian, or that you've got a Chinese, you know, sort of flair to how you speak even in English. It's really frightening, but also exciting. So I think you have to kind of go at it with, you know, a shield, but also knowing like you need to tame it, but also work with it, but understand that, yeah, there are potential for threats. Just enable your two-factor authentication absolutely everything.
I've got my 2FA on everything. WhatsApp, Facebook, all of it.
Yeah.
All of it.
That's really what I would say, is understanding that, yeah, you have to kind of embrace it and see how it helps enable your process to be more smooth and streamlined. But unfortunately, it is just something that is evolving at such a rapid rate. Yeah. And everyone is kind of in the same boat, at least, which is maybe some comfort.
Yeah, 100%. So then what are some of the use cases, what you use AI for in your day-to-day work? What do you use it for?
So I generally use things like Midjourney, VizCom, which is free.
VizCom, I haven't heard of VizCom as much as like your Midjourneys, your DALL-E 2s, your ChatGPTs, all that. So what does that do?
So VizCom, it's not as fancy or highfalutin as Midjourney, but essentially if you have a very plain picture or a layout of what's something that you would like to create, you just use that as a template. You import the image and say, give this, you know, a chestnut finish with, you know, with windows and lighting and with plants or something. So it's also like image generation, but based off of an existing image that you have. It can be quite limited or limiting, but it's still, I mean, for, you know, production purposes and for like user journeys and briefs and that sort of thing, it's really great, and it can be really nifty in a tight spot. Also because it's free and it's quite fast if you don't have access to DALL-E and Midjourney and paid for apps.
100%. So what is the downsides of using AI in your field, if there are any?
I think like anything, it you know, it could also not destroy your creativity, but I do think that it can make you a bit more reliant on it in a way. So then you lose that sense of, oh, okay, well, let's add a Moroccan flair to this, or let's incorporate, you know, multi-levels and layers and that sort of thing. And it'll come up with something and you'll be like, oh, that's actually kind of nice. Yeah, I didn't think of that. So it can definitely cause a bit of a lackadaisicalness. But if that is a word.
Does it make you lazy?
Yeah. So I think it could definitely stunt your mindset for, okay, how dynamic can we go with this? And because you're just reliant on it.
Yeah.
Like what you're hearing so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking subscribe now button. Follow on YouTube, Instagram, and other platforms listed. Also, check out the website for more information. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for the support. Now back to the show.
Yeah.
So I think it could definitely go that route.
I get you. So when did you start using it in your work? And what exactly do you use for? Because you say you use VizCom, you use Midjourney.
ChatGPT I also use just for prompts and even for like personal things as well, just to get an idea of briefs and, you know, layouts and that sort of thing. Even like I said, for my friend's wedding, we had to come up with a whole list of games. And I was like, oh, well, I do have some, but it would be nice for it to just create some prompts for me. I'm like, okay, please create some prompts for like a treasure hunt that's like bridal themed or whatever. And it was like, sure.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So it was, it just saved my Saturday afternoon, like no one's business. So like I was a thorough fan of ChatGPT. I was like, hello.
Yeah,
100%. So I was very, very happy with that.
Yeah.
So I try, that's the thing. I still try not to tend to use it that much with my creative writing and when I have to create scripts or even with editing, because you can do certain editing with AI, like text-based editing in Premiere Pro and that sort of thing. I try not to do that just because I know like it will create a bit of a laziness and that sort of thing. And even though I'm trying to still be like, okay, well, let me embrace this and incorporate this, because if I get too far behind, it's going to be curtains and then you're going to be like Nokia kind of thing, redundant. So, just trying to stave off what you can while you can, and only when you really are in such a tight pinch and you say, okay, let me just resort to asking it for some ideas for this. And then I'll take even an iteration of that idea and run with that. I won't take it verbatim and say, this is my idea.
Yeah.
I say, well, it prompted this. And then I went with, it gave me an orange. And then that made me think of Tuscany and or whatever. You just go based off of that.
Yeah. I see. All right. So are you not afraid of being replaced by the tool that you're using?
Not for the next 5 years, at least.
Not for the next 5 years, at least.
Yeah.
Because okay, so, a lot of people are, I don't even have data, like people that I've spoken to and I read on some forums, they're afraid that they're going to be replaced by AI. And there's different schools of thought there. For example, some, yes, come up with robots that can just actually, like physical robots, that can actually do your work.
Yeah. That's actually quite... Did you see the one recently? I don't know who it was, if it was Microsoft or something, but it was this robot that while it's busy packing dishes away and giving an apple to this guy, it's busy talking, but it sounds like a person. It even stutters over itself. Obviously it's been programmed to do that, but it's unnerving, but it's also like
scary.
Insane. Yeah,
it's really scary. I saw something like that. So people are afraid that their work is going to be taken because of like your physical factory work. I mean, you're in more danger of having your work being taken away from you. Like South Park, they took our jobs. That's what's going to happen. And then for knowledge workers like yourself and myself, not so much, because we're using it to enhance our work and to move ahead. So are you afraid? So you're not afraid for the next 5 years. Why not?
Just because of, you know, them being able to deploy it on mass scale for to implement into factories and that sort of things. I don't think there's going to be a lot of capital to kind of implement it on such a broad scale. But I do think, though, that it should boil down to company ethics and that sort of thing to say, okay, well, if we replace our workers, we know we're going to be doing this. But unfortunately, not a lot of businesses work like that. So it's...
This is business. It's all about the bottom line. What else can I tell you?
That was very good, actually. That was your voice. That was really good.
Marlon Brando.
Yeah, man.
Look at how the mess up on my boy. Make him an offer, can't refuse.
I'm a big fan.
I remember I was a drama kid. Didn't we do?
Yes.
We did drama together somewhere Shared Space of Home back then, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that chapel had seen some things.
Yeah, that chapel.
Theater kids.
Yeah, theater kids. We had soirees. We were singing there, dancing there. Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah, I used to moonwalk there. Yes, kids. I used to moonwalk. Yes, I did.
Used to? What happened?
Huh? What do you mean, what happened?
Can you still?
I still can, but okay. I just don't have any.
You made it sound like that you're in deaf, like you're deficient now. You can't.
No, I still can, but then it was just like that. That's what I.
Okay. Yeah, I used to. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. So. Okay. So let's circle back to the things that you like to do outside of AI and also doing the work. So you just hot off the press came from a jiu-jitsu exam, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so that's quite actually quite weird. Not weird. It fascinates me because I mean, like, I realize, you know, I live in South Africa, and then my brother-in-law, he's also into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right?
Okay.
And I asked myself this question: if me and my wife are walking down the street and someone attacks me, what am I going to do? The answer is absolutely
wow.
No, not that I won't do anything. It's just like I'm not in the best position.
Stop it.
I'm not in the best position to like defend myself or defend her. I'm like, someone comes and slaps her in the face and this guy is big. I'm like, babe, you just got slapped. That's what happened.
You've been slapped.
That's what happened. We'll try to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, you know what I'm going to say next is what? I want to go to, like, going to want to recruit you now.
Into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
I mean,
you do boxing, no?
No, I don't do boxing. Eh? I just work out. I'm like, I've been thinking which martial arts to pick up in terms of like from a fitness perspective,
okay,
as well as a self-defense perspective.
Mm.
Now, some people say, I'm a big John Wick fan, you know? Like,
I mean, who isn't?
I'm a big John Wick fan. They killed his dog. And he went and killed 87 people as a result of someone killing his dog.
So. I mean, that's fair.
87 people over your dog.
I mean, I would do more, but that's fair.
That is like the most basic movie premise I've ever heard of. Guy walks in, they kill his dog, he kills 87 people.
I think it speaks to like the masculine, like, and I know there's so much talk about like, oh, masculinity and like toxic, there's so much circulating about toxic masculinity that I think it's given such a bad rap, you know? But I think it's, and I obviously probably sound like maybe I'm woman-splaining this. But
it's not a thing! Woman-splaining is not a thing!
Yeah, it can't exist. It only goes one way. Mm. But I think that it speaks to the masculine rage that, or like aggression that, you know, if you are wronged or if something happens to you in such a horrible manner. I mean, like, so his wife died. He was already down.
They broke into his house.
They beat him up, killed the dog, took his, you know, his car, everything. So, I mean, I think it's the reason it got such a cult following is because it speaks to that side of if you've been wronged, you're going to want to go out and just not hold back, not going to maybe even say two words the whole film. You just go out and you just fuck people up.
Properly. For two straight hours. That's what I love about John Wick. He just goes out there and he beats ass.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yes. Then you've got Ian McShane in there and you're just like, oh, well, I mean, I've got to add some class. So it's brilliant. And he does his own stunts. So, I mean, yeah. It was a recipe for a win. Yeah, it really was.
100%. I think one of my next birthday parties is going to be a John Wick theme. You come dressed as
a dog.
No, come dressed as a dog. Bring a dog. But come dressed as an assassin from John Wick.
Is it going to be a dog-shaped pinata?
No, I'm not going to do that. That's just evil. This is evil.
I don't know what way this theme is going to go. But I think that could be interesting. You know, oh, it was like paintball like John Wick theme.
Yeah.
That could be pretty fun.
That could also be very
Everyone
fun.
Everyone has to wear like a black suit, white button-up shirt.
And then we'll go paintballing.
Yeah.
Pew, pew, pew. Everybody going to die.
Yeah.
Pew, pew.
And they all have to wear like shoulder length black wigs. Like, exactly. Severus Snape, Alan Rickman kind of thing. I mean, I don't know why it does it for me, but it does. I think I would just be like,
Yes, I'm leaving here with my husband today. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Dave's in danger.
But Dave, she said it, not me. Not me.
Put the wig on.
All this
Can I tell you, we have no wigs. We just have a bald cap
at home.
Just be, like for funny video. Oh, what was it? I bought a bald cap. Oh, it was years ago. I wanted to cosplay as Aang, Avatar The Last Airbender. Never got around to it. But I was like, oh, let me buy this bald cap. Did I do anything with it? No.
Absolutely.
But now I just got this bald cap that I use for funny videos for my TikTok every now and then. And I put it on the other day and I was like, I mean, I can kind of make a bald cap work.
Exactly. I can work that thing.
Yeah.
So back to John Wick. So then I was like, okay, so for me, I love the character. I love just how he's introduced. He's a man of commitment, focus, sheer fucking will. Ah, yes. I love it. So I was like, what martial art is he involved in? It's like closer to like Krav Maga.
He does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well.
He does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well, yeah. So I wanted to like to learn something that I want to defend myself. I don't necessarily want to kill the other person. If I could, let me do
that. I was about to say, but don't you really?
Yeah, well.
If you have a garden big enough to bury the body, then maybe.
I do.
You like do.
If you look outside the...
And you've got a dog called Simba, so...
I have a dog called Simba, yeah. And I've got a big cross. I can just put someone there.
Nice, yeah. Yeah. Like Jesus Hesperus.
Exactly. So so I'm like, that's what I wanted to learn, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, when the time is right. It's probably sometime this year when my time gets freed up.
Yeah.
Then I heard Andrew Tate. I don't know why I'm quoting him on this one. He said, to learn boxing first will help you from a striking perspective, and then you can go into not kickboxing, but just like boxing, Muhammad Ali type of stuff, Mike Tyson, and then learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So... for a person who wanting to learn to defend themselves, why is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that thing?
Well, personally, I mean, I don't dabble in many of the other martial arts that much. But for me, most altercations, that sort of thing, they could end up leading to being on the ground.
Yeah.
Ground fighting, grappling, that sort of thing. It depends, you know, obviously how you fight, that sort of thing. If there's a gun involved, then something like Krav Maga, which they do, I think, with weapon training – then yeah, that's going to be your go-to, but it is hyper-aggressive. Then you've got judo, which is pretty much very similar to jiu-jitsu, but it's with throws and that sort of thing. But the principles are very, very similar. Mm. The reason I chose jiu-jitsu is because I love they say, oh, you can still be small and you'll still do great things and you can still roll against bigger weights. I think they say that just to like recruit you.
Was that a cap?
They're like, oh, you don't need strength, and you're just like, no,
you need strength.
but having said that, it is really great because you can still be a relatively smaller person, and you know you can work your way out of something, out of a grip, out of a hold, that sort of thing with the right technique. Mm. And because if you do end up on the ground. Then it is a lot easier to I think just make things transition from there.
So I would say
definitely go into jits, but boxing and that sort of thing, I would say if you were to couple it with that, you'd be doing yourself a huge favor.
Okay, cool. So I'm gonna start with boxing and then transition to jiu-jitsu, or should I do the other way around?
You could even just do them both simultaneously.
Okay. Yeah,
you don't necessarily have to start one and then go to another.
Oh, okay. I would say you could just do them together.
Yeah, because then you would learn something in the one class that you can incorporate into your next one.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh my word, okay, this has actually worked out, and you can figure out this technique, and it they bleed together pretty well.
Okay. Literally.
Yeah, literally.
What made you start Brazilian Jits?
Well, actually, it was from a self-defense perspective. It started out for self-defense purposes.
Because a lot of people they've got a story. Why did you start working out? Well, I was beaten up by a midget. They stole my alcohol. I'm looking at you, Luco. That's what happened to you. That's my brother-in-law. That's what happened to you. They stole your alcohol.
And that's enough to have got him down the path. He's just like, never again will I have my drink stolen. I'm going to go like wholeheartedly on this now. Yeah, so it was. I mean, I'd always appreciated the beautiful movements and just, I think, the discipline. And there's such a silent stoicism to I think being so disciplined in something like a martial art, where it challenges your body, your mind, everything else, your sense of self, and your dedication and commitment. So it really did start for just self-defense.
Sure.
And then when I started at the academy that I'm still at with today, I'm like a divorced kid. A kid of like divorced parents. Okay. So I have two different gyms that I go to. When I'm in the East in Benoni, I go to East Rand Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy. And then where I live in Bryanston, I go to Apex. So whenever I just visit Benoni and visit the parentals, I go for a drop-in class every now and then. And
so you're visiting the parentals today, right?
Okay,
so you live in Bryanston now. Oh,
yeah, Bryanston.
Oh god,
where the brand tastes so good it changes your dialect.
Exactly.
It really started out as that, and it was just me and like one or two other girls who started at the same time. All the rest were guys. And I didn't have brothers growing up.
Okay.
It was just
you and your sister, yeah?
Yeah, just me and my sister. I wasn't really exposed to like boyfriends and that sort of thing until I was like 21, 22. Like I was just like not interested. Yeah, like in every sense of the word, bro.
Some of us had girlfriends since we were 12. And then,
some of us were not that popular. So it started out as that. And then it progressed to me being more comfortable around men as well. And I was like, I don't really feel safe around guys and that sort of thing. And now they're trying to simulate murder with me. But I'm willingly, and I'm also not a very tactile, touchy, feely person as well. So, but willingly putting myself in a position, there was almost like a, well, I consented, but there was a consent to this. So it was, it almost felt absolutely fine because I knew I was putting myself in this position and it's okay. The funny thing was my first drop-in class that I ever did, I was so sunburned because I didn't plan my life really well.
Is it?
And when you put that gi on and it's got that heavy like pearl knit and it just like digs into you. And I was like blistering and everything. And I thought, well, if I survive this class and I'm in so much pain, imagine how when I'm not sunburned, it won't be as bad.
Exactly.
So that definitely did, I think, push my mindset to be like, okay, how much can we tolerate? And the discomfort and that sort of thing. And you almost oddly enjoy the discomfort of it because I think it makes you feel alive, as cliche as it sounds.
Yeah.
So I ended up staying then for the camaraderie and feeling comfortable around men in general and feeling like, oh, okay, well, I can trust this person. Oh, this guy helped me move, you know, to my new place and I could call on him and, you know, this person's really cool and I can chat to this guy and this other one, he's, you know, going through a divorce with his kids and I've been there like, and he's like such a dad figure so I can relate to him and, you know, with my own dad and that sort of thing. So I can, as a, you know, because while he was going through divorce, he was like, how did you deal with this as a kid? Because I don't want my kids to end up like this and everything, but I don't want to speak badly of that. And so
let me get this. So you go through a divorce.
No. Sorry. So my parents divorced.
Okay.
And so I know what it's like.
Oh,
and
then that's what you're referring to. Okay,
and then this guy at
jiu-jitsu,
he was going through a divorce and he was like, yeah, I still want my kids to come around and that sort of thing.
Okay, I see.
But he's like, how did you deal with this? And how did you? And I was just like, well, this is how I went through it and everything. And now he's got like a really good relationship with his kids and that sort of thing.
That's amazing.
So it was nice to like be there for each other in capacities that are outside of the sport and in a friendship capacity and as a, you know, as a as a fellow like flow roll comp mentality as well. So you really do get this idea that, okay, well, this is going to translate really well outside of just the sport.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And do you like making pastas?
Do I?
Explain that to me, because I mean, I need to really make myself a signature dish. I don't know what dish it is that I want to make, because I'm a very simple guy.
Okay.
Rice, meat, vegetables, that's as far as I can.
Wow.
And there's air fryers. Thank you, Lord.
Okay, no, yeah. Thank air fryers are amazing.
Thank you, Lord, for the air fryer. So you like making your like signature pasta dishes. Just take us through what your favorite one is to make.
Wow. Well, so my favorite, I've actually written its name down, just like the proper Italian name for it.
Linguini.
Yeah, because now we're getting to the real questions about food. Like, where have these questions been this whole time? Talking about, business and AI and John Wick, and now it's just like food. And I'm like,
yes. Let's go.
So there's a recipe called Linguini con la colatura di Alice.
Oh, nice.
And listen, I'm not some high fancy falutin person. I'm from the East. I enjoy a good spaghetti bolognese just as much as the next person.
Of course, yeah.
So, So, but this one, I enjoy it for what it represents more than anything. And that is the simplicity. I know a lot of people who like to cook love to give this very high class. Oh, it must give the essence of flavor. You mustn't really taste the fish, but just give the fairest hint that there's fish in there. Yeah, and that's what real food is. And you're just like, no, I want a Steers burger.
So do you consider yourself a foodie?
I do, but not snobbish in the sense it's like, I won't touch this, I won't touch that.
The first time I was introduced to the word foodie, I didn't understand what it meant. I was like, what is a foodie? And they said, that's someone who's into food. And I'm like, that's confusing. There's also another comedian who said the same thing. Like, we're all into food. Yeah, so like what are you talking about? So like
what? Yeah, what are you, a breathy?
Like, we'll breathe, we'll eat. And then there was like, no, a foodie is someone who's into the art of making food and the different nuances of it. I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah. I think I definitely learned my love of cooking from my dad. He's a really, really good cook.
Shout out to Dad for being a good cook and inspiring the rest of us guys who are not such good cooks.
Shout out to Pops. Yeah. And I think I learned a lot about eating good, healthy food from my mom. So I really...
Shout out.
So I think I had such greatness at my disposal growing up. So my favorite recipe is that I like to make would probably be a good old straight spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah.
But you gotta jazz it up. You can't half ass it.
Yeah.
I think when they say, oh, you got to make it with love, it really does resonate with you.
Yeah.
But for me, it has to be a thing where the pasta is cooked al dente. Mm-hmm. None of this mushy business where it sticks to the bottom of the pot. They cling to each other.
Yeah.
They gotta be nice and chewy and just right. So, and that there's an art to that.
Mm.
But I think that's where there's maybe a bit of like the stress part.
Yeah.
But with the sauce, you can just have fun with that part. You can always chop and change it every time. It doesn't need to be the same thing. But with this con la coloratura dell'Isi, what's great about it is that it is so simple and quite authentic in its Italian nature that it doesn't need to be heavy or creamy or anything else. It's like, do you ever like anchovette?
Anchovette?
Yeah.
Please explain to me what anchovette is.
You don't know anchovette?
Maybe I don't know what it is. So what?
We got it all. Wait. That's fish paste.
Oh, you mean anchovy?
Yes, anchovette.
Yeah. Like the fish paste. Yeah, yeah, I get that.
That's
like,
been discontinued.
The last time I saw that was like years ago. Like the fish paste. Yeah, I know that. Yes.
Did you ever like it? Clearly not.
When I was hungry. Yeah. Like if there's fish paste and you have to eat, you got to eat. Yeah.
So I loved it. But so this is like anchovies, like distilled in a, like the oil and that sort of thing from it. So it's very. So
it's a paste, basically.
It's more like an oil, like a see-through vinegar kind of a thing.
Mm.
So it's.
See, learn something new every day.
So it's not super salty, but it's nice and umami, which is like really earthy kind of flavors to it. But it's not super in your face.
Sure.
So having a simple pasta with a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of parmesan or parsley, and some chili or something like that, just for you to really appreciate every single ingredient that's gone in there.
Yeah.
And not just a mishmash of something that's been drowning in cream.
Yeah.
I really, really do appreciate that because you sit there, and especially if it's something you've grown from your own garden, like chili or spinach or whatever.
You grow your own things.
How did I
know that? She grows her own stuff, you know what I mean?
I try. When the crop's been good, when the yields are down, I'm like, that's got to be worth.
See, she doesn't even go to Spa, she goes to Woolies.
But yeah, before payday, I'm like, fruits and veg city.
Yeah.
Which is also, are they still a thing? No, Food Lovers. Yeah, Food Lovers are the cheapest ones right now.
Is it?
Next to ShopRite. So, yeah. Then I'm just like, okay, well, a chili's a chili.
Yeah.
But, so I would say the simplicity of enjoying something that doesn't need to have so much piled on top of it, like a pizza with five different toppings, you kind of lose appreciating just how salty an olive is or just how creamy buffalo cheese is, that sort of thing. Yeah, so sometimes simpler is better.
Yeah.
But personally, what I can make with my eyes closed is my dad's famous spaghetti bolognese made with lean beef mince, a tin of tomatoes,
yeah.
and an onion.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little bit of chili if we're feeling spicy, if we're feeling a little bit fancy.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, once you've cooked the pasta and strained the pasta, you pour cream into the pasta, into the colander, so that the pasta is itself quite creamy, but not drowning in it because it's all strained through.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you've made the meat sauce, you pour cream into that as well. So this is not for Weight Watchers. If your cholesterol's like mine, which is horrendous, like you really shouldn't be having this. But I'm just like, you only die once too. So
depends how you want to do it.
Exactly.
You know?
And if I die by the spaghetti, I die by the spaghetti.
Yes. Live by the spaghetti, you die by the spaghetti.
Exactly. That's exactly how I see it. So yeah, if I was to go, I would do it on my own terms.
On your own terms, of course. Yeah. Do you sometimes salt bait? Don't lie. I'm sure you've tried that.
I mean, who hasn't? Sometimes it lands on your own elbow, and then you gotta be like, "Oh shit, man! This looks like Epsom salt or something."
Take two.
Eczema shit. So yeah. But yeah, I would say I really do enjoy making a dish, even for the first time.
Sure.
And also the ones that you know that you can do with ease. There's something really homely and really meditative about it.
So what would you suggest to someone who's not a foodie like me for a basic dish that I can make for myself and I'm like a very basic...
of like a full-on dish, not just like, oh, appetizer.
No. Like, it's a dish. It's like dinner. I'm not making starters. It's like the main course.
Main course stuff.
And it needs to be very basic. You know, what would you, as a foodie, suggest that I make?
Very, very good one. I mean, I personally think that you can't really go wrong with pad thai.
Pad thai.
Yeah, because it's... You can get so messy with it. And if it's a bit too salty, a bit too spicy, you can always add something else in there to counter it. It's not like, oh, well, I made chicken schnitzels and now they're kind of overcooked. Well, here's your burnt chicken. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You can, there's always something fixable with something like a stir fry or with something that's got sauces and that sort of thing. So, and how I always kind of try and think of it is that if something is a bit too spicy, you can either add something creamy or something acidic like lemon juice to counteract the hectic spice of it.
Yeah.
And if it needs a bit of sweetness, I mean, throw in a stick of peanut butter in there and it's great. So I would say something that can literally be all mashed up into one pot and that will still be great and servable to a lot of people. Something like that, personally, would be a go-to.
I'm going to try it.
I'll actually send you my pad thai recipe.
Please do.
I've even written in the notes and everything, like, because it's called for tofu, and I'm like, we're using chicken.
Exactly. Please do. Yes, send it to me so I can start dabbling and working in the kitchen right now.
Nice.
So then, just very quickly, do you want to give us some of your voice acting examples, or are they copyrighted?
I don't think they are, not to my knowledge. Oh, okay, I can literally just sound like anyone, and I'll just be like, "This is
okay." Give us three different characters, right? Give us three different characters. All right, character number one, go.
I like men now. That guy from the what's it? The Simpsons.
The Simpsons.
That one, Flip. I can't even remember his name.
Is it okay? All right, cool.
Yeah.
Give us Eric Cartman.
Oh,
from South Park, if you're able to.
God's mom's such a bitch, man. Biggest bitch in the whole world, man. These are my balls. Girls don't have balls. You fucking Jew.
I think we might have to actually burn that one.
Oh, bro. I'll see how I feel about that one.
We'll see on the
I'll
day.
I'll see how I feel about that one. All right, cool. Let's see who else you can give us. Can you give me Samuel L. Jackson?
I don't think I can fucking do that. I don't think. He's a bit above my pay grade.
Okay, cool. Last one. Give us someone from SpongeBob.
Who could I? maybe Patrick Starr. I don't know. Maybe like a bit of pitching. And then you can kind of do SpongeBob. Nah!
That's so good. Oh, my goodness.
Gary!
That is so good. That's so good. Yeah, good, good, good. So we're at the point of the show. Before we get to the point of closing, I allow the guest to ask me a question or two.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm allowing you the liberty of asking me a question about pretty much anything that you may be curious about.
The meaning of life.
Well, that I can answer, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So you are saying that you're wanting to get into a martial arts this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you said that what spurred that on was a want or a desire from your side to, you know, be protective and just be as prepared as possible in life. And that's just within your personal life just for now. Regarding, because you're so business minded and because you have delved into the world of business and made such paths and broken so many glass ceilings with that.
Yeah.
Where do you find it going for you this year? What path are you taking this year? And maybe a bonus question.
Yeah.
What has been the most rewarding venture for you this past year?
Okay. So I'll break that down. Let's go to the martial arts. So like you grew up with those Bruce Lee, you know, that Bruce Lee basically makes you think that you can fight makes you think you can fight. And then I was like, I wanted to do karate, but it just never happened for me. So I think there's still that little childhood, curiosity that I want to check out. And then also another factor for it is that I've got a lot of aggression, like a pent up aggression. I think that's also, you know, when you've got creative energy,
it can
turn out into aggression. So then I want to use that aggression in a positive way, because right now that's the outlet is the gym and weights. But then I think doing boxing and jujitsu will just help it be more creative. And then obviously there is the protection part, the self defense, but also it's like a quite of a nice thing, because I'm a very curious person, so I want to see like exactly. Yeah. And then also from being a guy, I'm writing my third book now. You can see over there, if you just look over there, it's called Father of Man. That's the concept art. And one of the things there is that for you to be a better man, you need to be, I think Jordan Peterson also said this, and Andrew Tate as well. And also biblically, you're told to be dangerous, but being able to control it.
Yes.
So then a dangerous man is, a harmless person is not good.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, a good person is someone, I can kill you.
Mm.
I know how to do it, but I choose not to.
Mm.
And you know how to control your
aggression. You're defined more by your control rather than your capabilities.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Mm. So the thing is that with stuff like boxing and martial arts, there's an element of discipline in it that I would like to pick up and learn from, because there are some areas of my life, I ain't gonna lie, I'm undisciplined and a bit lazy. So then I'm trying to combat that. And then also John Wick, come on, who doesn't want a John Wick people? Like, so I want to be able to say, put myself in a position to say, if I could John Wick someone, I could, but I choose not to. So then that's a part of it. And also how I write my books is I do something called method writing. And so this is one of the things that you asked, what are the things I'm looking forward towards this year? Is releasing this book that's been 4 years in the making. Because when I say method writing, I'll research a problem, write it out, and then actually implement it in my life somewhere.
Okay.
So one of the things I write is that to be a better man, you need to be indispensable. Like, they can't get rid of you. They have to be an indispensable image. You need to at least look good when you can. Indispensable physique. Like, at least take care of yourself. You don't need to look like Bruce Lee. You don't need to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but at least take care of your health that way. And then you have to be indispensable in your work. And then how that happens is that you need to be disciplined and you need to be a dangerous person. So a person that can box, that can shoot you, that can Krav Maga you, and can also have an intellectual conversation, that is a very, very, very dangerous person. So that is one of the that's method writing that I've been doing as well.
Okay.
So what I'm looking forward towards this year is releasing the book, making sure that my target over the next 2 years in terms of sales, because I believe in the message that we need to build better men, not good, not perfect men. Not men who don't go to Hooters or strip clubs, or all that. Because like,
hey, that's how I got my job.
You see what I'm saying? So keep going to Hooters, guys, and
give women jobs.
Give women jobs. So like, there's a whole notion of perfect men doesn't exist. Men who don't make mistakes doesn't exist. Men who are sinful doesn't exist. But we can have better men. So I'll be pushing that in terms of, and also having men's conferences, like a proper men's conference. You know those lies they say on the 14th of February is a man's conference, and so you're not going to be able to take your wives out and all that stuff.
Yes.
So, and also in terms of getting the sales of that, I want them in the tens of thousands for this one. That's what I'm looking for, because I believe a lot in the message, in that message, and. I'm hoping to finish my doctorate dissertation this year.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's the one, biblical studies, and I'll explain why. Because there's I have a question that I'm asking myself from a spiritual perspective. This is not necessarily even a business perspective. Now, this is a spiritual perspective, because I grew up in a household where my dad believed in ancestors, my mom in Christian beliefs. And then now you grow up in this household where you've got like two very strong beliefs, and I'm trying to make sense of it myself. So, and no one has a clear answer for me. They're like, people in the church, sometimes they don't even read, don't even know the Bible, they don't even read it extensively. And then people who are on this side with the African traditional perspective, some of the things that they believe, they don't even understand themselves. It's like they're pegging their whole life and their whole existence on this thing that they don't really understand themselves. So I want to find the answers out for myself. So then,
I think it is such a, I mean, I'm not a religious person at all.
Yeah.
But I do think that having...
We went to an Anglican school. Come on now.
I think that's why it wasn't popular.
We went to an Anglican school.
Like, heathen.
Like, even there, there's stuff they were telling us in chapel. I'm like, how, like, explain it to me. I'm trying to understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. I still remember they making us watch Passion of the Christ in grade 2.
They made you watch Passion of the Christ in grade 2?
Yeah. I remember.
Wow, really?
And
I'm sure that's how you felt. I'm like, what? That's too graphic for a grade 2.
It was. I remember. I was thinking, like, can we not watch Jimmy Neutron? Sure, okay.
Come on. Ben 10, maybe?
Yeah.
Powerpuff Girls, Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Really? Well, I can actually do that one better.
Yeah. Scooby-Doo-Doo.
But it's like, yeah, it was just kind of, for me, it was just felt like really forced. But getting back to it, I think... from my limited understanding and that sort of thing of religion, I think it goes hand in hand with something like faith.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's such a personal thing that no one will have the answers for you, because it is such a personal thing for you.
Sure.
And no matter what someone says, it won't satisfy you until you make sense of it yourself. 100%. And it suits your parameters of what you need to need to kind of go forth with.
No, 100%. And people... pegging their entire existence on something that they don't really understand. That's what my experience has been. So I'm like, okay, fine. Since this bishop can't tell me what this is, since this person, or the spiritual authority, can't tell me what this is, I'm going to go find out the answers for myself. So that now when we engage in discourse, I'm like, okay, so you're talking that we should live like this. What are you basing it on? Like,
yeah.
Honestly speaking, what are you basing it on? Because a lot of people will be taken down a road for a very long time. And then now, 50 years down the line, they figure out their entire existence was based on a lie. Mm. And that's very, very painful. So I'm like, that won't be me.
Yeah.
That will not be me. And then also from a business perspective, I've written a number of articles, and I'll just like package into a book, 48 Laws of Power, project leaders, because I work in that space, and people don't understand the human behaviors. And human behavior drives the money and the profits and all that stuff. And they don't know how to, quote unquote, manipulate people. I'm going to say manipulate people, but also use it in a good way.
Good
way to drive the results. And then, like, I'm just looking at all the areas that I work in now. I'm like,
call it prompting, how to prompt people.
Yeah, how to prompt people, how to get what you want. People, I'm like, I want more money. I'm like, that's not how the world works. You need to be able to maneuver that arena around. So that's what I'm looking forward to this year. And then also from a podcasting perspective, doing more international guests. So obviously I have to do that via Zoom and YouTube. Get a lot more international guests. Get your superstar sister Ashley. Yo, listen, pilot. Ooh, my pilot. <guy. laughs> Doing a lot more international people based in the US and the UK. Just carving out the time for that, because now I want to get a global perspective on success and on business, and then just like broaden my horizons. That's what I'm looking forward to this year. And to answer your question about what has been the most rewarding in the past year, I think what has been the most rewarding in the past year, 2023, it was a rough year, eh? Wasn't 2023 a rough year for you as well?
It was. I thought it was maybe just me.
No. A lot of people went through it in 2023.
Okay, fair enough.
A lot of people went through it in 2023. The most rewarding thing for me was, I think, purchasing this house.
Because
we got it in December.
So you own this?
Well, the bank owns it. We're still paying them back.
Nuance.
But yes, I receive. Yes, we own it. And then just really having a space for family to come over where I can do the shows here. So I think that was the biggest the reward from all the work that I'd done in 2023, as rough as a year as that was. I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. That's actually quite a few things that you accomplished in the 2023 year.
Yeah. So then, but then the outlook for 2024 is that, like, I'm like, 2023 was so rough in all areas, like mentally, emotionally, spiritually, financially. I'm like, 2024, it has to count.
Yes.
It has to count. I was like, before 2024 comes, I'm like, can I please read the terms and conditions of this year before I sign agree? Because there's absolutely no ways. So
I hear you.
Yeah, so that's some of the outlooks that I have for 2024. Yeah.
Nice.
Sure.
Well, all the best luck for them. I mean, I really do feel like you've got, at least like you say, you've got your whole lineup and your list of things that you want to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's going to put you in such good stead.
Yes. Yeah, so it's like I'm Rose University in it. I have my list.
Oh, yes. One of those. You started young.
Exactly. Started young. You got to start off young. All right. So we're reaching the conclusion. Is there any message you'd like to the people to hear as your last parting shot?
As a last parting shot?
Yeah.
I think, something I have definitely... what actually think started me down this whole venture of voice acting and that sort of thing, because I knew I could always do it. As a kid, I loved doing voice acting, and it started just wanting to make my sister laugh and parents and friends sort of thing. But I think that it was just hampered by timidity. And as you go through teenage years and then you're in your 20s and you want to be taken seriously and that sort of thing. And you want to also showcase the sides of you that are more intellectual and not just silly and all that sort of thing and being a goofball. But I think recently something that really kind of stood out to me was thinking that, well, we're only here for a very finite amount of time on this earth. True. And I don't want to have any regrets, that whole thing. But the main phrase is to just leave timidity at the door. At first, I thought it was leave shame at the door, because I still feel like I suffer from shame and imposter syndrome and everything on the daily.
See, but if it happens to her, like who are the rest of us mere mortals? I mean,
it's so kind. I'm going to leave here with such a greased up ego and be like,
I mean, like, you're so good that they thought you were going to bomb the Chinese consulate in Dubai.
I was that
Dubai.
Good. I mean,
you were a Mission Impossible villain.
I was. Bro. You should actually see my passport photo. I look like a Slav who's here like a spy, like Evelyn Salt kind of vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually once at the airport recently, and this one lady's like, "Can I give a survey? How did you find our country? And did you enjoy your time here?" And I was like, "I live here." And she's like, "Oh, but for how long?" I'm like, "I was born here." And she was like, "Oh, eh." She just like went off. And I was like, me and my sister, we always get told we look like Eastern European spies.
Yeah, yeah.
In
from
the
mountains of Caucasus.
Oh, wow. Mount Caucasus.
Yeah, yeah.
But so at first my idea was leave shame at the door.
Sure.
But I do think that shame does serve a purpose, because mm-hmm. it can also serve a purpose in terms of, you know, telling you, okay, you weren't your best today. Sometimes you do need to feel a bit of shame in order to hold yourself accountable. But I think timidity serves no purpose anywhere.
For the people listening who are not sure what timidity is, can you just really explain it to them?
To be timid, so that means to be shy and to hold back and to not kind of come into your own and be too nervous to be seen, be heard, to just go out there and know that, okay, well, even if I give it my all and it's really only 50% and it's not that great, there are going to be days where there's going to be that. And consistency isn't 100% every day. It's going to be 20, then 80, and then maybe 57, sure. and then down to 17, and then it's up to 75. There's going to be that. And I think kind of giving yourself grace with that as well. Mm-hmm. That kind of leads you to leave that timidity and that fear of, you know, your shyness and worrying what other people are going to think. And I say this like a little hypocrite, but I still worry a lot what people think.
Yeah.
But it is something that I'm slowly trying to think of less of and worry less of.
Yeah, that's some powerful stuff. Leave timidity at the door. Yeah, you need to be bold like Muhammad Ali. Wrestle with an alligator, tussle with a whale, handcuff, lightning, throw thunder in jail.
Wasn't he the one who actually said something about, what was it? It was Muhammad Ali who said that I will come back to it. I'll think of it. But he said something that was truly astonishing with regards to...
Is it something about like playing small or not being... Not being humble or anything, something like that. Because he was very outspoken. I mean, like he said, he said that he's so humble that he would admit his only weakness. I still don't know how great I really am. I love that. I love that, because that's so true.
Yeah,
a lot of us don't know how great we really are.
Yes,
and because of what you're saying, timidity, and also like you, my sister from a Slavic mother, in the case that, in the sense that the timidity has been a thing that I've struggled with my entire existence.
Yes.
So you coming in and saying leave timidity at the door really resonates.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali was like, "I'm so humble that I'll admit my own weakness that I don't know how great I really am," and that was really powerful.
Yeah. I think he's such a quotable character.
Yes.
Such a quotable character, and I feel terrible that I cannot remember. I literally listened to it on the way here, but it was something to the effect of he who has made it and he's really big and he's up there, but the piece of advice that he was imparting was something along the lines of that you can still feel like you haven't yet made it,
mm-hmm.
but really no one really knows what they're doing at the end of the day. So you kind of almost, it's giving yourself almost license and permission to suck and to not really be all that in a bag of chips, because everyone is just going through it. So it's such a permission, I think, from someone as great as he is to all of us who are still trying to feel like we're getting there. But I mean, we're all trying to get there, even him.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing. Yeah. So if Muhammad Ali is still trying to make it, you too can make it, people. All right. So Caitlin, Thank you very much for making your time to come to the NJ podcast and becoming one of the guests that I've done for 2024. It is an honor and it is a privilege.
Thank you so much.
It's not a white privilege like you have or white woman privilege. Like, guys, it's real. Guys, this thing is, I've been telling you guys, this thing is real. Yeah. This thing is very real. And I've got a friend, a white woman, blonde hair, blue eyed, who's Slavic, who comes from the mountains of Caucasus herself.
Saying
that white woman privilege exists. So white women don't lie and say you don't have white privilege.
No, it is a real thing, I must admit. It is.
Really? It's so good to have someone admit it. It's so good. Because we all know it's true, but they don't want to say it. You've got it. Like,
yeah, it's just like, oh, well, maybe not in that context.
And you guys hijacked the Me Too movement. How did they? not the Black Lives Matter movement. You guys hijacked that too.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, Black Lives Matter was like, it came from George Floyd, who was like murdered, and all of a sudden, they hijacked that as well.
Then, where did it go from there? Was it the All Lives Matter?
And then it became All Lives Matter. Then it became All Lives Matter. I'm like,
yeah, no, I must admit, when I saw that, I was just like, yeah, but. I had no words.
Bill had something great to say about that. It's like, white woman, come on. Like, you were part of the crime. You just don't like your cuts.
Yeah. No, I think there's something to be said about victim mentality sometimes amongst people. But I do understand, like, there are so many minorities and people who have, I mean, even also, like, everyone, like, white men also have certain things that are unfair, but it's patriarchy and it's everything that is kind of ingrained into us. Black men, black women, everyone has so much kind of pitted against them. But it's, I really do think that at the end of the day, it's just trying to be more human and being more understanding and coming to the party with that growth mindset.
Yeah, but my entire take on whether or not Caitlin's got more privilege than me, well, fashionably speaking, essay she does. Whether or not you've got more privilege than me, I've got more privilege than you, whatever the case is, I still believe that it should not be an excuse, whether the privilege is good or whether it's bad. It shouldn't be an excuse for you to treat people lesser than, and it should not be used as an excuse to hold yourself back.
100%.
I believe that. But then white privilege does exist. Thank you.
It does. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. It does.
I've got it on video. Yes, I've achieved it.
So, he's like, you can go now. Yeah.
So, but thank you very much for your time. I will have you definitely be back on, whether it's later on in the year or in the new year.
I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me, though.
Yeah, and guys, remember that success is a progressive realization of the ideal. That means you're going after what you've always wanted to go after because it's aligned with your highest values, and that is the only way for you to live a truly fulfilled and inspired life. And please, where can the people connect with you on? You've got Kate Whispers on Instagram. Where else can we find you on TikTok?
On TikTok, if it doesn't get banned. But yeah,
it's going to be banned in the US. It's not going to be banned worldwide.
Well, I suppose, but you never know. They might just have overarching power. I don't know. But so TikTok, Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn if we go.
Well, don't laugh.
LinkedIn. I haven't been able to access my Facebook for weird reasons. I'm really just on those two.
All right, cool. Please connect with her, reach out to her, and just get her to do some voice over acting for you. You know what I mean? So, guys, that's just me, myself, NJ, Jobro James, and then that's with me, Caitlin Henning. The voice acting extraordinaire who knows how to make pasta, who knows how to fight, and told you to leave timidity at the door. But more importantly, she's got the white woman privilege. Anyway, guys. Guys, thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for joining us on this episode on the NJ Podcast. Make sure to visit the website, the njpodcast.captivateair.fm, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, all the other podcast platforms, or via RSS so you never miss a show. You can also find the video content on the YouTube channel and Instagram page. That will be Njablo James on YouTube and Njablo.j.ngosi for Instagram. Please subscribe and follow on those platforms as well. And while you're at it, if you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on the podcast platforms, or if you'd like to tell a friend about the show, that will help us out too. If you'd like more information about published or upcoming books, visit www.njabulojames.com for more information. Please reach out if you'd like to share what you would like to hear and which guests should be invited to the show. And remember, success is a progressive realization of a worthy ideal, which means that you are doing what you have always wanted to do because it is aligned with your highest values, and this is the only way you can live a truly fulfilled life. Now just chill until the next episode.